Cardinal Bucks.
He's not coming in here.
Make sure you get that.
It's always good to have a book. Makes life a little easier.
All right, so we dealt with the end of the war. We dealt with the beginning of American involvement in the war. But because I'm assuming most of you have very little knowledge of what Vietnam as a country is about, we'll start off by giving you a little history of Vietnam. Because it's out of the history of Vietnam that we'll basically see how the hell we ended up being there. And of course, then we'll see what kind of a mess we got ourselves into. All right, put away the Aztecs, though. Vietnam, as a country, if you will, is ancient. It is almost as old as China itself. It can trace its origins back to about 3000 BC. And life, like all of the ancient civilizations, started in and around a river valley. But in Vietnam, it wasn't just a single river. Oh man, it's a touch screen. Stop, go for it. Go for it. Do what I want you to do. Cooperate. But it wasn't just a single river, but it was a river that opened up in lowlands, creating a delta. So all throughout this region are channels and channels and channels, very high water table, surrounded by picturesque mountains and rivers and ponds and tranquility. The name is actually Chinese in origin. Vietnam. Viet refers to a group of barbarians that lived outside on the western fringes of China. Nam is south. So the region got its name on Chinese maps as being the place that was south of the Viet people, which has nothing to do with the people that were actually living there, which is kind of funny. Those are the kind of things I get a chuckle out of. Now, archaeologists have done diggings in and around this village, or this area, and ironically, they found evidence of Homo sapiens dating back over 780,000 years. They were there pre-Ice Age. Way back during the Paleolithic period. So you had a group of human beings that were living there, and over time they advanced and developed and had calamities, had good times, had bad times. But eventually they would develop their own type of kingdom. Now, again, based on archaeology and mythology, the oldest origins of a civilization, an organized civilization with a government and organized urban centers and technology, dates back to around 2800 BC. So we're literally talking at a time about 700 years after Mesopotamia, about 200 years after Egypt, around the time of the Indus River Valley people, and the origins of the oldest Chinese. So these are ancient human beings that have lived in this part of the world, seemingly forever. Now the center is this part right here, in what today would be considered northern Vietnam. That's where most of the ancient remains are located. The only reason that archaeologists seem to agree upon is just that delta was a safe place that they could consistently develop food. And the mountains served as kind of like a natural boundary which allowed them to avoid a lot of outside groups from coming in and basically overwhelming them. At its height, it stretched into what today is geographically modern China. And at its southerly tip, about midway through the modern country of Vietnam.
So it was sizable.
The capital of this ancient kingdom was known as Quo La, which today we call the city of Hanoi. So, well, it's hard because they don't use Memphis anymore in Egypt, and Babylon was destroyed. You know, all the old hubs of ancient cities have been basically plowed over and leveled. But there are still actual remains in Hanoi, in the southern districts, where you can go and see ruins of this ancient kingdom period. And by the way, I'm kind of a nerd, and if you think about it, what's the oldest structure you can see in our country? How far back do you go?
A couple hundred years.
Yeah, right? Jamestown? Plymouth? Actually, the oldest place I went was there was a fort in Puerto Rico that I went to. It was made in like 1520 or something like that. In Vietnam, you can go see remains that go back almost 4,000 years. It's insane. Also, what do we know about this ancient times? Well, at some point during this ancient period that they figured out how to produce their most secured foodstuff, wet rice. Rice is a grain. Throughout most of the world, it's harvested like wheat. Meaning you plant it in the ground. It grows stalks. And you pull the kernels off. The ancient Vietnamese figured out how to actually take little seedlings and plant it in rice paddies. So it's constantly surrounded by moisture, which causes the roots to go deeper and the stalks to grow more plentiful. Today, if you were to go to modern Vietnam, there are rice paddies everywhere. And by the way, the rice they produce is brown rice. Not the bleached white rice like you can get from like Uncle Ben's. They also developed metallurgy. And I was going to put a picture on there, but I had no other point to talk about. So I just decided to skip over it. But during this period, they made bronze drums. They were so good at metal casting, they figured out how to make drums and shape them so that way each one gave off a particular tone. So it was tuned perfectly to whatever decibel, whatever tone they were trying to achieve. So why do I mention this? They weren't dumb. They weren't primitive. They were advanced. For 2,700 years, they lived under their own control. Relatively peacefully. There's little signs or proof that there was much warfare during this ancient time. And it seemed by around the 2nd or 3rd century BC they became prosperous. But it was that prosperity that made them fell victim to one of the major developments north of the border. China. You know much, anyone who know anything about Chinese history? Do I say like the Chinese dynasties? Chinese history is divided in whichever ruling family was controlling the country at the time. One of the most important dynasties was the Han Dynasty. And that basically took its origins after the overthrow of Shi Huang Di, the first emperor of China. When they overthrew him, the Han basically conquered not only all of Shi Huang Di's China, but they also expanded the country down into Vietnam. And in 179 BC, the first Chinese armies invaded and they conquered. And at its height, they would come almost all the way down to the southern tip of Indochina. And that's the way it was for another 1,000 years. They were just a province in the Chinese Empire. They gave tribute, they gave offerings, they sent soldiers if called upon. They were basically subjugated. Now, even though they were conquered, Vietnamese history tells us this also was a time of peace. You know, there were very few big events for a span of 3,000 years compared to that what took place in the Mediterranean world. You know, yeah, okay, you had the Greeks, or you had the Carthaginians, you had the Persians, you had the Romans. Everyone comes and eventually they fall over and over and over again. But this part of the world, peaceful, thousands of years. But unfortunately, that stability came to an end when the modern country, if you will, really began to emerge. And it emerged with revolution. Which sets a historical precedent. Going back to its creation, the Vietnamese people believed the only way they could secure their freedom was through revolution. In 938, a warlord, Mok Kuei In, raised an army and managed to drive the Chinese out of Vietnam. This battle is the equivalent of our Independence Day. It's known as the Battle of the Bok Dang River. The Bok Dang River is basically the White River. Mok Kuei In would declare himself a king, and he would create a kingdom and attempt to find a dynasty. The kingdom, of course, would be based in the Red River Valley. The kingdom would be known as Dai Viet. Dai Viet. Which means the Great Viet. Chinese word. Viet, the outsiders, the foreigners. Apparently, he called it Dai Viet to be kind of like an FU to the Chinese. That, look, we're greater than all of the other people you conquered and subjugated in your empire. Because now we got freedom. Woohoo! Although, modern books refer to this part of Vietnam as Annam. A-N-N-A-M. And it would basically make up the northern provinces. But his dynasty, the Go dynasty, would be short-lived. It only lasted until his grandson. Over the next 700 years, there would be 8 successive dynasties. One after the other, after the other, after the other. Each basically doing the same thing. Revolutions, seizing power, holding power until they were overthrown. This created about 800 years of non-stop war. The rulers would do something interesting. They would import Chinese culture. So the rulers modeled themselves on the Chinese emperors. They brought in the Confucianism. They brought in Chinese philosophy. They began using Chinese mythological symbols and so forth. Just kind of like the impact that America has on pretty much the whole world today. You know, if you, not that I'm trying to be offensive to any Canucks, but Canada is basically just like the United States light. You go north of the border, sure, they have Tim Hortons, they got back bacon, and they wear toques, but you can go get McDonald's, you can get Coca-Cola, you can go get a Budweiser. Because the United States influenced our neighbors. China did the same thing. But while the ruling class embraced Chinese culture, the majority of the people would embrace a religion that emanated from India, Buddhism. Buddhism was brought by wandering monks that were traveling the Silk Road. Any of you know anything about Buddhism? If you follow the Eightfold Path of the Buddha, you can break the cycle of samsara, which is the belief in reincarnation, and become one with the universe by gaining wisdom. Well, ironically, not only did the ruling class embrace Chinese culture and Chinese philosophy, not only the people in the North largely embraced this other foreign idea, this religion, but my notes are wrong. All right, I know why. I wasn't going to give it to you on the notes. Also during this time, Islam came in, as did Hinduism. So, this once independent country that was left alone suddenly started seeing all of the outsiders coming in and bringing in foreign ideas, creating a very unique stew that would eventually become uniquely Vietnamese. But it seemed like, for the most part, the people were kind of like, live and let live. So if you wanted to become a Muslim, yeah, go become a Muslim. You wanted to be a Hindu, go be a Hindu. Wanted to be a Buddhist, knock yourself out. All right, questions? But the other interesting thing over the period of these eight dynasties is Vietnam would also see consistent growth. Die Viet would expand from its base, and slowly their armies would march southerly. This is what it was like at its creation. By about 1000 AD, they're moving south. Fast forward to about 1500 AD, they're conquering all of these little villages and provinces. And this expansion would continue all the way into the yellow, which at one part was part of Cambodia. This expansion is known as Nam Tien. Nam Tien. Nam, south. Tien, expansion. The kingdoms grew. As they conquered more territory, more resources were produced, more food, more people, and the kingdom became stronger. Questions? Sorry, work. That was my today. So good, I get to go home today. FYI, I try not to text during class, but as I might have told you, I do lots of things. And one of the things I do is a lawyer. So sometimes if my phone goes off, Every single text is worth $200 to me, so nothing personal. It's all about the Benjamins. All right. Suddenly grow. But all good things must come to an end. And by the 1600s, Vietnam had grown so far, so fast, that eventually it would run into problems. And during the 17th century, the 1600s, the ability of the rulers of Dai Viet to control the whole country began to become disrupted. Part of the reason was an attempt to establish yet another dynasty. And to make things bad, the rivals managed to make an alliance with the Chinese, who were looking to come back in and take possession again of Vietnam. To make matters worse, parts of the southern region started trying to rebel. They didn't want to be conquered anymore. So we'll just say that it was messy. But a weird thing happened. One group managed to emerge in the north, overthrow the ruling dynasty, drive out the Chinese, and overthrow the challenging dynasty. And they would take possession of the north. And in the south, another group emerged and kind of just beat back all comers. Now, technically, there would still be a king. But the new group in the north and the group in the south kind of made a loose agreement. Hey, quid pro quo. We won't attack you if you don't attack us. You can rule the north, we'll rule the south. And thus the kingdom would be divided. And that division would remain in place all the way up until the 1960s. Northern state, a southern state. The northern region would become known as the region of Dang Nguyen, which is Vietnamese for the outer land. Outer land. The group controlling the north was a group of warlords, a clan known as the Trinh. They would keep their capital in the modern city of Hanoi. By the way, outsiders would refer to the north as Tonkin. Southern, in the yellow, would be controlled by the Nguyen. The Nguyen tribe. They would call their part of the country Dang Trong, which means the inner land. And they would set up their base of operations in what was originally called Phu Chang, but they would later rename it as Hue. H-U-E, Hue. Now amazingly, when this occurred, they got along swimmingly. The north didn't look to attack the south didn't look to attack the north. They had a king that was technically like a figurehead, and nobody messed with anybody. And in Vietnamese history, from 1673 up until 1772, they entered a period known as the Long Peace. The Nguyen lords did what they wanted to do. The Trinh lords did what they wanted to do. And ironically, one of the things they did was expanded their country. Nguyen pushed further south and started taking chunks out of Cambodia. And the Trinh started going this way, and attacking what today is Burma and Laos. But they did not attack one another. All right. Questions? Okay. And then change came. The door would be ripped open. And around the time of the American Revolution, chaos would descend in the South. Jiang Trong. In the provinces north of Hue, out in the villages, peasants began rising up. They were sick of paying high taxes. They would like to attempt to break away, gain their independence. Well, eventually, rebellion would also break out in the South, particularly in those Cambodian territories recently conquered. And before you know it, all of Jiang Trong was up in rebellion. And then like a wildfire, it would eventually make its way north and start impacting Dang Nhua. Chaos along the whole coastal country. Fast forward. One warlord would eventually emerge and pretty much conquer everybody and bring peace back to the country. Xia Luang. A warlord. Not only did he manage to topple the technical rulers, but he also defeated both the Trin and the Nu Yua. Drove out the Chinese and would take control of the whole kingdom. Solely as an emperor. He would found a dynasty, no connection to the Nu Yuan warlords, no connection. By the way, Nu Yuan in Vietnam is like Smith in America. But there's no family connection. What's the significance? Well, this would be the last ruling dynasty of an imperial system in Vietnam before the arrival of the Europeans. Throughout his long reign, his armies were constantly on the warpath and would, inch by inch, foot by foot, mile by mile, expand the empire to its highest, largest size. He ruled literally from what in today is modern China all the way down to the southern tip of the peninsula. He would officially move the capital from Hanoi to Hue. That would be the site of the imperial city all the way up until the 1950s. And it was he who opened Vietnam to trouble. Because we all know the reason why we went into Vietnam was to bail out the French, right? Yeah. And how did the French get there? He let them in. He would make an alliance of sorts by befriending a Catholic priest who had been allowed to enter Vietnam as a Catholic missionary. Pierre Fenet de Benet. He had been serving as a priest in a southern village, which today we call Saigon, although actually, technically, it's Ho Chi Minh City. He was there as a missionary. He came in contact with Xilong, when Xilong was a child. They developed a great friendship. And when Xilong emerged as a warlord during the time of chaos, Pijinae agreed to basically represent Xilong as a diplomat. He would travel to France. He would attempt to make an alliance with King Louis XVI. Louis XVI even agreed to it about 2 weeks before the French Revolution broke out. But Father Pijinae managed to recruit French mercenaries. Hundreds would eventually travel to Vietnam and help Xilong conquer all his enemies. He also acted as a business agent. He made deals with European weapons manufacturers. He managed to buy a couple of European ships. And managed to make some business contacts in Europe for the fledgling warlord. Now, what could have been if there was no French Revolution? Who knows? But it was this friendship that basically allowed Xilong to basically conquer everybody. Where everyone else, all of his enemies, were still using swords and spears and bows and arrows. His soldiers had muskets. They used cannon, artillery. They had ships of the line. Ships that had masts with rows of cannon on it. He was able to pulverize all opposition. He also brought in European architects and would help the warlord make European-style forts that could be built at the mouths of all the rivers. So that way, if an enemy tried sailing upstream, these forts could open fire and sink the ships trying to penetrate the interior. And he would come to not only dominate the coast, but he would subjugate all of these other colored territories. Some he took land from. Some he forced them to basically become subjects. Some became tributary states. Pay money, pay weapons, pay soldiers. Just don't kill us. Vietnam is on the rise. A little interesting factoid about him, which would kind of get him in trouble. He opened the door to Christian missionaries. Because Xilong didn't really care about a person's religion. He wasn't going to tell you what to think, what to believe, what to worship, who to pray to. But soon, French and Spanish missionaries began coming in and converting. What's the problem with that? Well, they're foreigners in a foreign land. And if anything was to happen to them, international crises. Oh, true story. I don't know what the hell made me think of this. My son is over in South Korea. He's in the Navy. And about a month ago, he sent me a text. Dad, I almost started an international incident. I'm like, oh, God, Justin, what did you do? He's like, I was out jogging, and I went to a part of the base that I shouldn't have. And a bunch of South Koreans pointed AK-47s at me. They basically said to turn around. Like, what did you do? Turn around. Good, you're not a dumbass. But if a foreigner who is involved in the military or some other big organization like the Catholic Church, something happens to them in country, it could trigger an international crisis that could potentially precipitate a war. Spoilers? And here is the last thing about Xilong. While he allowed the missionaries to come in, you know what he did not allow? He didn't allow diplomats to come in. He didn't allow ambassadors to come in. He didn't allow businessmen to come in. Because does anyone know the state of Europe in and around 1810, 1820, 1830? England has control of India. The Dutch have control of Indonesia. The Spanish have the Philippines. They're all trying to potentially get into Japan, which is controlled by the Shogun and still isolationist. But of course, that would be ripped open by Commodore Perry in the 1850s. They're also looking to get into China. Because China, at the time, had the largest population on Earth. Imagine if you could sell even 1% of the Chinese population some product. Megabucks. So irony is that Jia Long attempted to use the European weapons, the European style of war, to basically keep them from coming and taking over his country. Open the door with the church. Jia Long died after a long reign. He would be succeeded by his fourth son, Min Mong. Min Mong would attempt to follow in his father's footsteps, strengthen Vietnam to keep it free. It would not be conquered. It would not be subjugated. But it would be he who would set Vietnam on a collision course with France. See, he was very conservative. He was not tolerant like his father. He wanted to impose upon his people what they should believe. And he also had no use for foreigners. Not only did he want to keep the foreigners out, and by the way, during his reign, England tried, France tried, the Netherlands tried, even the United States tried, getting into Vietnam, tapping their resources. But he managed to hold them off. He also would kick the French out. While he did, his father allowed some French to come in, particularly arms dealers. Minh Mon ended that practice. Why? Well, he caught some French merchants trying to smuggle in items that were not allowed in Vietnam. Opium. Drugs. Drugs are bad.
Good.
Well, about a decade later, another revolution occurred against him. And these revolutionaries were basically looking to overthrow the emperor and put a friend of his father on the throne because they wanted to bring back religious toleration. They didn't like the idea that the emperor is trying to tell them what to think. But the revolution itself would be crushed. Minh Mon then discovered who were the instigators. Who were doing this? Who was doing this? And it turned out the revolutionaries were Vietnamese Catholics who wanted to allow the Catholic priests to continue. So the emperor then launched an assault against the Catholics. He would label them as Tho Diao, which is Vietnamese for heretics. And he would issue the Du Cam Diao Gia Tu, which in English is the edict to restrict Catholics. This law aimed at crushing Catholicism in his country, forbade Mass, forbade the Eucharist, forbade copies of the Bible and the Rosary and other Christian symbols. And guess what happened to you if you were caught? You'd be brought into the town square and you'd be beheaded. And then guess what happened to your spouse? And then guess what would happen to your kids? Anyone contaminated with the taint of Catholicism would be killed on sight. Well, here's the thing. He also kicked out and made it illegal for not only missionaries to come in, but in the law it also said any foreign missionaries caught spreading Catholicism would be killed. Again, remember the story I said about my son? International incident? Well, ironically, word would get back to France, and the Catholic priests would beg the rulers of France to build a military force and go in and liberate the Catholic people. The bishops and priests were begging for France to send an army and basically overthrow the ruler. Well, at the time, the ruler, Louis-Philippe I, he wasn't paying attention to what was going on in the Middle East because he was creating designs to go and invade North Africa. So he kind of ignored their requests. But the priests kept writing, and stories were appearing in French newspapers talking about the horrid atrocities that our poor Catholic brothers were suffering. War averted. Questions? When Ming Mong died, his successor, Thieu Tri, would attempt to de-escalate the situation. In fact, one of the first moves that he engaged in upon becoming emperor was releasing several missionaries that had been caught, were imprisoned, awaiting their execution. He freed them, he apologized to them, he encouraged them to get on ships, go back to France, and say, look, we're good, we're good. But all of them didn't leave. And in fact, one of them actually jumped off the boat as it was getting ready to sail off the harbor, swam to shore, and got into the interior and started preaching again. Bishop Dominique Lefebvre. He hid in the jungles, preached the gospel, gave Mass, gave the Eucharist, all in direct defiance to the law of the land. Well, in 1845, he was caught preaching the gospel. And he was condemned to death. Word got out. French quickly sent diplomats to meet with the imperial council to beg for the release of the bishop on promise that the bishop would come back to France. Dutry's government said fine. Didn't want an international incident. But lo and behold, just 2 years later, the bishop was caught back in Vietnam again, doing the same thing. This time the emperor said, no pardon. So France sent two warships. Now, when the crown found out about the arrival of the warships, he quickly released the bishop. But the ship's captains didn't know that the bishop was released. So they actually opened fire. And Da Nang is an entryway. This is a river. This yellow line, this green line, it's a highway that follows a river. This was the entryway where you could sail a European ocean-going vessel all the way to Hue. Guarding Da Nang were some of those fortresses that I talked about. Well, European guns had advanced tremendously in the 50 years since Qianlong made the fortresses. So the French ships open fire and they level the forts, killing dozens of soldiers. And then five Vietnamese ships sailed out to stop them. And the French opened fire and sunk all five. Outraged by the attack, the emperor ordered anything that was European. Any documents, any items, they were all to be smashed. Any French person caught in Vietnam would be captured, arrested, and subjugated to execution. Two weeks after issuing his orders, his soldiers caught four missionaries. Tried, executed. Things were escalating. But just when things were getting really bad, the emperor died. And a new emperor takes the throne. Thieu Tri's son and heir, Thu Doc, basically figured the only way he could get his country out of it was to shut Vietnam. Don't allow anyone else in, so that way we don't have to risk any international crises with these foreigners. And that would be the best defense. He prohibited trade. He also prohibited Christian missionary work, particularly the Catholics. Now, Louis Philippe was not really paying attention to what was going on. He was looking to expand French territory in the Mediterranean, in North Africa. But by the time of Thu Doc, there was a new man in town. 1848, Louis Philippe would be overthrown in a revolution. Shortly after the revolution, the French people got together and they made a constitution and they had an election. And they would elect the nephew of Napoleon Bonaparte, Louis Napoleon Bonaparte, to become the president. Now, by the way, just 4 years later, after his term was set to expire, he would also trigger a revolution, a coup d'etat of sorts. He won the support of the army. He overthrew the Second Republic and put himself on the throne as Napoleon III. An emperor! And what do all emperors want?
More land.
Anything else?
Power.
More power. Anything else?
Yes.
Money. Oh, yeah. Oh, And let's also add to the fact that he also was a devout Catholic. So, when word of what these little Vietnamese people were doing to Catholics reached his ears, he decided, you know something? I think I want some more empire. And I think that Southeast Asia region looks pretty good, geographically located right in between India and China. So, he creates a bureaucratic agency in the government, the Committee de la Constitution. And the job of this committee was to estimate the costs of building a necessary military force to basically force their way in. And of course, what was the justification? What is the emperor doing to all these Catholics? All right. Gonna pause one more time. Take a step back. We're almost done, by the way. How did England and France and the United States and Russia and other countries, how did they get into China? Does anyone know?
Through other countries?
What do you mean other countries?
Because, I mean, other than sailing in, maybe they probably haven't gone through other countries.
Oh, no. They did sail. The Europeans had ocean-going vessels. They could sail around the world. What I meant is, how do they penetrate? So the government wants to keep these people out. How did the Europeans basically force their way in? Chinese, like most Asians, don't want these Europeans coming in because they saw what the British did to India. They saw what the Dutch did to Indonesia. What'd you say?
I said trade.
Trade. Trade of what?
Anything. Gold, different crops, animal, people.
Those are things that are a lot of really expensive, aren't they? Don't you want to have like a high profit margin?
Wasn't it the point because China had a high population?
They did. They did, but you don't want to sell them anything that's too valuable, no? Because if you sell China or anything valuable, what's going to happen with China?
They're going to have more stuff.
They're going to have more stuff. They're going to become more powerful and be able to kick you out. So, what could be an alternative substance that you could sell to them that would weaken... What?
Drugs.
Drugs. Oh, yeah. Opium. Any of you learn about the Opium Wars? England literally went to war with China over the right of England to sell opium to the Chinese. Because the Chinese long ago decided that drugs were bad. And the opium that the British were selling was grown in India, highly addictive. It was estimated that right before the Opium Wars erupted, about 2% of the Chinese population was hooked on their opium. The population of China at the time is about 500 million, 500 million people. So 2% of that is a lot. And the British wanted to sell more. The Chinese government, however, said, no, we don't want our people to be hooked on drugs. Because if you're hooked on drugs, you're a freaking druggie. You're not going to work. You're not going to contribute to the well-being of society. You're just going to sit around and just be drug-induced. And by the way, opium? You know anything about opium?
Heroin.
Yeah, it's like heroin. You smoke it, heroin you inject, but it's basically the same effect. So you take it in and you get zonked out. You start having hallucinations in your brain and you just cannot physically function. You basically go to sleep in a drug-induced coma. But it's so highly addictive that once you take one or two hits, you just need more and more and more. So, England used opium to get into China China said no to the drugs, so England comes and says, okay, fine, no drugs, we're going to go to war. And then the British were joined by the French and the Americans and the Russians. They blasted open the doors of China. Well, France, during the Opium Wars, had redeployed a large military force that had, once the Opium Wars were over, nowhere else to go. So guess what Napoleon decides? Why bring the boys home? Send them to Vietnam. Actually, what time is it? I don't want to get much further. I think that's good for the day. What do you think? I mean, we only covered about, what, 800,000 years of history. So I think that's pretty good. All right, so we will come back on Thursday, and we will look at what the French did, how the French quickly conquered, and how they established a colony, and what they did to the Vietnamese people. Then next week, we'll start talking about the development of a nationalist movement, because it's the Vietnamese desire to be free and independent that ultimately is what resulted in the Vietnam War. Because the Vietnamese didn't want anybody in their country. But it's just ironic that the person who would be tapped to lead this nationalist revolt was also a commie. That guy in the tea shop that we talked about last class. All right, questions? All right, topics. Topics for your paper, January 31st. Again, buy the book. You can find it on my website. Do you remember my website? I'll give it to you once I let them all go. Get the book or start looking online. See if you can figure out some stuff about Vietnam. You can talk about I just gave you a huge area to write about. You got 800,000 years of history if you're interested. Or if you're more interested in the war between the United States and the Vietnamese, you got a lot of stuff there. You want to talk about what the French did? Stuff there. So lots of possibilities. Just give it some thought and send me an email. I already got one student in here that got their topic approved. So don't procrastinate. All right? Awesome. Aaron, you don't remember my website, croftlemanic.com?
I didn't remember it like 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Really? You're senior now?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Here, let me open it up.
Does the topic have to, like, be explicitly about Vietnam, or can I do something like American, like, the Air Force in Vietnam?
Oh, yeah. Well, that is. It is. It's just not Vietnamese, it's us in Vietnam. Yeah.
Right.
That's part of it.
Cool. It's like a more defined topic.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Talk about like F-4 Phantom or...
Yeah, I was going to do like the development of like fighters during the Vietnam era.
Yeah, they made a quantum leap forward.
All right. Awesome.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Appreciate that.
Yep, just send me an email.
I will. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, don't.
Have a good one.
All right. Oh, see ya.
All right.
So we got the class stuff.
Right there. Like it's fun. Oh yeah.
Yeah, right there. I recorded. Mm-hmm. The grading system is probably the same.
And then
four exams.
I'll just one paper. And before you were talking about the war between America and Vietnam. You
see? Yeah.
I could just choose any topic at all.
Anything dealing with. Yeah. The United States versus Vietnam, or the French versus Vietnam, or if you're really curious, any of the stuff I covered today.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'll see you
today. All right. Thank you for joining the class.
Yes, sir. Thank you
very much. I always like it when good students come back. All right, so that's been moved to Thursday now. So I got nothing tonight. Good.